Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Now Alex Bregman, the last hope for the Astros, who need another base runner to bring the tying run to the plate. Tuve takes off. Ball fly to right field. Brandon Lockridge in his first major league start will catch the final out of a shutout. Two-pitcher combined shutout. Dylan Cease and Tanner Scott getting the last two outs. Cease was amazing today. And the Astros dropped the final game of this three-game series 4-0.
Yeah, Cease was really good. Cease was really good last night. Welcome in, everybody. On a Thursday, Payne and Pendergast with you here on Sports Radio 610. Ton to get into on the show today. My big takeaway from that game last night, Seth. By the way, how are you this morning? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm feeling great. I've decided after yesterday's extreme snarkiness that I'm going to be magnanimous all day long today.
Oh, really?
So everybody buckle up. Yeah. I'm going to be nothing but brimming with positivity towards all who would otherwise earn my derision.
You're going to get
tested. Dylan Cease, what a fine young gentleman.
You're going to get tested early in this show. I'm just looking at the rundown. All the chatter about CJ and Caleb yesterday. What is wrong with people?
I'm not going to be petty one bit.
No, me neither.
I don't have seven different items that I could get petty about marked down already.
Right, yep. Right. My takeaway from that game last night, as we heard Todd Callis talking during Alex Bregman's, by the way, Todd Callis on the call, another great call by Callis and Blum yesterday.
Yes, I love those guys.
I do too. They're good at their jobs.
Yes.
As we heard them saying, Bregman gets on, that'll bring the tying run to the plate. My big takeaway from that game is I think Xander Bogaerts had money on the Astros yesterday with the two errors in the pot, yeah, in the top of the ninth. Like, the only thing that's keeping the Astros in this game is the fact that Xander Bogaerts might have gone and shotgunned three beers during the eighth inning at some point.
I like Xander Bogaerts.
I do too.
I think that he did everything he could, especially, you know, versus a guy like Framber, where, you know, fielding is at a premium when you're facing Framber Valdez.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a duel through six innings, and then Manny Machado just had a really good at bat, mm-hmm, and a home run, mm-hmm, and these things happen. And then Caleb Ort, who I will say nothing about, just Dude. Other than that he let up back-to-back-to-back home runs, which is fine. That's a boy. That was fun for Padres fans. Gosh, I couldn't be happier.
Has that ever happened? I mean, they bring in Caleb Ort, and he has to stay in for three batters. That's the rule. So has anybody ever come in and given up? I mean, you can't cannot do any worse than that coming into an inning. Is to give up.
Yeah, you're right. It's
mathematically impossible to do worse than Caleb. Caleb Ort had the worst outing you can possibly have as a reliever.
He had an infinite ERA through those three
for that outing,
pitchers. If you come in the inning, there's no possible configuration where he could do any worse than that.
Yeah,
that was the worst pitching performance in the history of pitchers.
It can't be worse. Well, at least for relievers, right?
Like, I mean, it's tied with a bunch of people. It's happened, since the new rules began. I'm guessing it's happened a few times.
You think it's happened where a guy's come in and has to face three hitters and he's given up a home run to all three a bunch of times?
I don't know.
I don't either. I just feels like, wow.
Sean, I'm trying to be magnanimous. This is the first time the Astros or the this is the first time the Padres have hit back to back to back since Ricky Henderson was involved or something. It's been a long time.
Doesn't happen that often.
In the three batter mandatory rule has only been 4 or 5 years now.
Since
I'm guessing this might. Good job, Caleb Ort. Break it. One of our listeners is probably already has this and is going to text it in.
Oh, good. Well, I hope so. Yeah,
I like making history.
I do too. And sometimes it's bad history, but whatever. They're going to win the division.
I was sitting there contemplating Dylan Cease's name and how, boy, it's very punnable, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and back in the days of newspapers, I would have eagerly awaited the headline this morning to see what pun they came up with for
ceasing
Cease
to let the Astros get hits. Yeah.
Instead, I'm thinking Caleb Orbit? Yeah. Oh, yeah. A century into orbit? Yeah. How about that?
Good job, Seth.
Not to mention this damn scourge of Calebs and Kalens.
Yeah.
All these horny bastards 25 years ago that decided that they were going to name their kids Caleb and Kalen.
Yeah.
Just hereby wreaking havoc on my ability to say the proper name, which is already faltering, obviously.
The Shaq era is winding down for kids' names right now. We're into Caleb and Kalen now.
Shaq ain't winding. Shaq Mason ain't winding down. That whole O-line is fat as hell, man.
No, yeah.
Those guys got big in the offseason.
They did.
Bunch of fat, happy bastards.
We'll get to them in a second. So the Astros...
I've gotten three texts about Titus Howard. Hey... Was he always this big?
He's huge. He's huge. The Astros lose last night. The Mariners lose to the Yankees. So this thing is just... I said it last week. I'll say it again. Like, this is the least kind of juicy division race that we could have here, because no one... You know, like, the Astros lose, and it's like, well, the Mariners... Like, this divisional race... Which looked like it might be something when the Astros got back. They got that 10-game deficit. Boom, went away in like a month. Like, all right, this could be fun. Now they play the Mariners a bunch of times. Hell, they play the Mariners next week for three games. Thing might be clinched by then. Like, those games might not mean anything next week. The Astros play four against the Angels this weekend. They just swept the Angels. This division's going to be decided basically by the clock running out. Like, the sand is just going to run out in the hourglass for the Seattle Mariners here soon.
This feels like, who's it that does the turtle races in Midtown there?
That's Little Woodrow's in Midtown.
Little Woodrow's. Yeah, do they still do the turtle races?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they do or not. We don't do shows.
This feels like
anymore.
A turtle race.
It does feel like a turtle race.
Turtle race on Quaaludes.
Yeah,
you loot up you give a bunch of Quaaludes to the turtles and see what happens. That's what the AL West has turned
drugged
into.
Drugged up turtles. Yes,
taking it back to the 70s up in here.
Yeah,
which I'm fine with. I just like I love watching people struggle.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I like. I'm fine with Alex Bregman making an incredible throw from third base on a bunt. And John Singleton being unable to corral it because he's not Yuli.
Yep.
This is I'm fine with being reminded of just how paltry they are at being able to do the simple things at first base.
Did you see the report that Dana Brown and Scott Boras ran into each other while the Astros had been in Southern California? I think it was at the Angels series. That they,
is this like a Texas baseball hire where they ran into each other?
No, in a
cemetery.
There's
somewhere.
Nothing unseemly okay. going on. No, they ran into each other, but the two of them are going to have to talk here at some point because Boras is Bregman's agent, and yeah. I think a lot of Astro fans would like for Alex Bregman to be on the team for a few more years. And the quotes coming from Dana Brown, I don't have them in front of me, but they were something to the effect of, yeah, we ran into each other, and we both know we've got something really important to take care of. It'll probably get taken care of, you know, like, get taken care of after the season. We'll talk at some point, and we'll get an offer over to Boras at some point. And I understand, they're in September now, so contracts are the last thing you have your mind on, and yet Matt Chapman, a Boras client with nearly an identical back of the baseball card to Alex Bregman, got a deal done a week ago.
Bregman's been better by a spell and war and all that stuff, mm-hmm. which, of course, you know, Boras can't just say that. He's got to have a 200-page binder to give Dana Brown a bunch of stuff that Dana Brown already knows.
Right.
But the Matt Chapman deal, a six-year, $151 million contract. He's a year older than Bregman. He's got almost identical numbers.
Yeah, they're very similar players.
Yeah, and they've both been really – I mean, this is the one thing that Astros fans, myself included, it never feels like this. That Bregman's, in terms of war and a lot of the advanced stats, Bregman's been one of the best Major League Baseball players since he got that deal back in 2018. He's been very, very good. It's been with long droughts and then big surges. It just hasn't been consistent.
Well, and he got off to an incredible, like Chapman, he got off to an incredible start to his career. Like, they were both top seven MVP candidates in the same seasons early in their career. And then post-COVID, they've kind of leveled off to where they're merely all-star caliber players as opposed to perennial MVP candidates.
Yeah.
And so Bregman, I saw that war stat, and I was shocked that Bregman is that high up among all major league. Like, if you told me the number is there's only eight major league players that have been worth more wins above replacement than Bregman during Bregman's time here in the big league.
Yeah.
Like, he's... Which, if you told me he's one of the top eight third basemen, I would have said, oh, okay, that top eight players is like, wow, that's crazy to me.
Since I'm being magnanimous this morning, I'm not going to point out that, like, you know, Chandler Rome, when he writes that, he could just write he's got the ninth best WAR in baseball since that time.
He never will, these, Seth, just so
these
you know.
Baseball writers try so hard to make things sound a little bit different or something.
It's never happening, Seth.
only six people have a better WAR plus two after that until you arrive at Bregman, who's ninth. Yeah. Just say he's ninth.
It's never happening. Right? It's not going to happen. This is
But I did, when I read that stat, I was like, wait, among like infielders or is this what? No, it's all major leaguers.
But if you take a step back, like it's surprising that it's that. But if you take a step back, like, Bregman's game is conducive to the wins above replacement metric, you know,
the defensive side,
his ability to work, you know, like his ability to grind at the plate. He's a really smart. He's not a prolific hitter, but he's a super smart hitter.
He single-handedly turned Hunter Brown into a not just a viable major league pitcher,
that
but a really good major league pitcher.
Yeah.
I swear it should. You almost got to factor in Hunter Brown's WAR since Bregman gave him the advice to start throwing his sinker and just tack that onto Bregman's.
That's it, man.
It's realistic. I think it's fair to say that if Bregman hadn't given Hunter Brown that advice, the Astros wouldn't even be in the playoff race right now. They would have had to. Hunter Brown would have been back in the minors. It would have been just a disaster.
Maybe, yeah. That's quite possible. That's, you know, 5-game lead right now. Hunter Brown, has he been worth wins above replacement? Won't say he's worth 5 games, but he, you know, like
they'd be in the playoff race, but they wouldn't have this commanding yet also faltering lead over the Mariners.
You wouldn't feel nearly as good as you do about them actually doing something in the postseason, because it's Hunter Brown and Framber that are going to carry this starting pitching rotation come postseason time, unless Verlander figures it out in the next week and a half. You know,
if Verlander doesn't figure it out, I am going to crush Bregman for his failure to coach up
Verlander. Yes.
Yeah, this is where you're not good in the clutch as a pitching coach. I'll tell you that, Bregman.
All right, we got a lot to get to with the Texans. Injuries, Brevin Jordan goes to the IR. We'll hear from some of the folks around the Texans about that. A lot of faces not practicing yesterday. Your top two centers and top two running backs not practicing yesterday. So we got to dig into that. We'll get into that in headlines. But up next, this is the strangest thing I've seen people get agitated about when it comes to NFL football players. This CJ Stroud, Caleb Williams interaction after the game. I've never seen people get so upset on behalf of an athlete who could probably use the advice from CJ Stroud. We will get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I guess I don't know. Should I be surprised that the interaction between C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams had this many people talking yesterday? It was on national debate shows. It was getting people up in Chicago agitated.
Yeah.
It was, and it's funny, the agitation. And I honestly, like, the initial appearance of what we're about to talk about here that I saw was after some of the C.J. Stroud mic'd up blurbs surfaced on the internet, and it was Texan fans getting offended that Caleb Williams looked like he didn't want to talk to CJ after the game. And for those of you who are going, what are you talking about, Sean? What are we talking about here? I'm got to get up to speed. CJ Stroud was mic'd up for the game on Sunday against the Bears. The full video is out. It's like a 6-minute video. It's excellent. As mic'd up videos go, it's really, really, really good. So go out of your way to find it sometime later today. There was an interaction with C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams at the end of the game as they were shaking hands, where C.J. was giving Caleb a little bit of encouragement. Looked like Caleb started to walk away, and C.J. said, "No, wait, come here." And then he gave him a little bit more encouragement, and then the two dapped up and left. This is a total... Ben, how long is this cut we're about to play here? This is like maybe 12 seconds, right?
Yeah, 12.
Literally 12, I guess it. Okay, good. Can I get a ding for that, Ben? Thank you. I just want to feel good about it. Thank you. Here's C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams at midfield following the game. Take a listen.
Good job out there, bro.
Yeah. Hey, keep going.
Stop taking those hits. Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
All right, so 12 seconds worth of, hey, stop taking those hits. Really good advice, I would say, right?
Yeah.
And then, hey, then Caleb pulling away, C.J. saying, hey, come here. you're going to be a really good player in this league. You know, you just got to, you know, just I don't think there was anything where he was talking down to Caleb. I think he's just
little broing him. That's
that's the verb I'm learning
yesterday.
In the last 24 hours is he little broed him.
He little broed him. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I guess.
Okay. So there's a couple different. Basically, I don't think you should be surprised that people read into this a lot and made a huge deal out of it, because there's been a narrative about Caleb Williams and maybe he's not that guy in terms of attitude or what have you.
Yeah.
And then CJ has gotten to a point where there's been nothing but full blown adulation regarding him for an entire offseason. At some point, there's a whiplash to that.
Yes.
There always will be a whiplash to that. You know, Pat Mahomes had a period of time where wow, what a great story, what a good kid, blah blah blah. Now he's despised in many corners. So this you should not be surprised that people read way into this.
No, you're right. You're 100% right. And we're gonna hear from CJ in a second, and then we're gonna hear from people who are really upset with CJ, which is the strangest thing ever to me. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. That's a good point, Seth. It's like the NFL is a room full of pinatas, and they've not yet gotten to taking a swing at the CJ Stroud pinata yet. Like,
I've been waiting for it.
I get to hit this one right here.
I can take my blindfold off. It's like you're having a birthday party, and none of these stupid kids are getting the pinata open. So you're like, okay, take the blindfold off. Just let's go.
Right.
Let's whack away.
Right. So let's hear from CJ on this, because CJ was asked about it yesterday at his press conference on the interaction between him and Caleb Williams after the game.
I had some of the best advice given to me last year, and you know, me and Caleb, I was not trying to like treat him like I was trying to like little bro him or not. He knows that too. I have a ton of respect for him. I told him I have respect for him. But I had so many guys coming to me after games last year, and that meant the world to me. That those guys even thought about giving me advice. So I just try to give back to what the game has given to me. So I wish him the best, man. I want him to do amazing in this league. I think he will. I think that he'll get his groove. And once you get your rhythm, I didn't get my rhythm until like week three, week four. So I can see him, his game picking up from here. And so, and you know, I don't think he was trying to like, you know, be any towards away. He's just upset that they lost. I totally understand. So I have a ton of respect for that guy, man. I want him to do extremely well, just like any other guy, until we play on that day. You know what I mean? And after the game, we can be cool. You know what I mean? But I'm definitely, you know, rooting for him and want to see him do extremely well.
Great answer from CJ. Not surprised. Great answer from CJ. And I believe everything he's saying there. He's not going over to little bro him. They've got a relationship, and he's trying to, you know, he's trying to encourage him. The one piece of advice that he gave him, stop taking all those hits, is really good advice for Caleb Williams, I would say. The stuff we're about to hear, like, I understand Caleb Williams, and so did CJ, being upset. Like, you know, he just wanted to get it. Like, CJ understood why he wanted to get out of there, just lost the game. The people getting upset on behalf of Caleb Williams for this thing is some of the strangest stuff I've ever heard. It's really weird to me. I don't know.
Like all of a sudden now they've decided to take up for this guy that I'm guessing many of them have lambasted for his cavalier attitude or crying in his mommy's bosom or any of that kind of stuff.
So the
one thing I would say about from Caleb's perspective, as I sat and reflected on this for far too long yesterday, was I think the biggest thing, if I put myself in his shoes, you've got your friend that's, you know, giving you some encouragement, but then as a rookie and your head is spinning, you've just been sacked 7 times. You had multiple big hits. Your offensive line did not play well, but you know that you've made some mistakes. It's CJ saying, don't worry about those mistakes you made. Where I might kind of be like, it's like if you just lost your job and somebody who came up to you and was like, hey man, it's going to be okay. Don't worry about the fact that your wife also cheated on you last year. That's all cool by now, I'm sure. You're just kind of like, all right, man, I just want encouragement. Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry about blowing those two big deals last month that we needed to bring in to make quota.
Don't worry about all the reasons you totally deserve to get fired.
Right. Okay, so that's a good point. So here, okay, we're going to hear from a few people here, including Mike Florio. Florio was on our sister station yesterday with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score. Dan Bernstein, longtime host up in Chicago. And he thought that maybe CJ was overstepping his boundaries a little bit when it came to came giving advice to the Bears starting quarterback.
We were debating this, of where Stroud is coming from. I found it to be a little presumptuous, if not performative on his part. For, I think it's one thing, what do you think the protocol is for when you can give advice like you're an OG quarterback in that moment after a hard-fought NFL game? If you're the same age as a guy, to go over and treat him like he's your kid, I could understand if Caleb Williams is like, look, I might hear this from Aaron Rodgers. I'm not hearing it from you.
Okay, we're going to hear from Florio in a second, but that was Bernstein laying out his view on it there.
Is this like the unwritten rules of base? Is there a protocol?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, what does the guidebook say? If only we could get our hands on that guidebook. It seems somewhat presumptuous.
It was, if not performative. this is okay, and we're gonna get to Florio and we're gonna get to Nick Wright too. I was shocked by how upset Nick was about this yesterday, but this is where I'm at. Okay, first take a step. This is 12 seconds we're talking. They interacted for 12 seconds on the field. Mm-hmm. These people are making it sound like he pulled them aside and took out a PowerPoint for the game and saying, here's all the things you did wrong and here's my advice on how to fix them. This Bernstein, though, okay, this is a very Chicago-specific thing to me. Your quarterbacks have sucked since time immemorial with your team. You should be happy. You should be happy that any good quarterback is pulling your quarterback aside and saying anything to them, because the standard for Chicago quarterbacks is rock bottom, dude. So you should be hoping that you should be hoping this happens with Caleb Williams after every single game, with every single quarterback that's better than him, pulling him aside and saying something to him in his ear, because your history of quarterbacks stinks. Sucks.
You guys are going to be trying to drown him in that damn lake of yours before November.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sure you like polar bear plunge or whatever they do up there.
Yeah, weird stuff. You want to hear from Florio on this?
As
you
can imagine. God, I can't hear enough Florio. Give it to me.
Imagine. Here we go. Here's Mike Florio, and if he thinks CJ was overstepping a little bit.
I try to watch objectively. Yeah, he seems like a guy who just lost a football game and really isn't interested in getting a lecture at midfield about basic, obvious stuff. Keep fighting. I mean, I don't need to hear cliches. I want to go change my clothes and get the hell out of here. So, you know, I think some made too much of it, but you're right. At what point did C.J. Stroud become Tom Brady?
He's not
there yet. So I think it was just a weird thing all around. I think it's not C.J. Stroud's place to preach to a guy who's just 1 year behind him by way of experience. And from Caleb's perspective, you know, look, you just lost a game. You don't want to hear it. But I wasn't surprised. I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised that the knee-jerk reaction by most was, who does Caleb think he is?
Of all the people who are licking their chops to take a swing at C.J. Stroud, like, Florio's probably like, finally. Oh,
he's hoping so much that C.J. will engage back with him somehow, because that is gold for him. Like, literally gold.
Yes.
Or Bitcoin, or however he chooses deposit his web money. Yep. So, here's the thing. I see these Chicagoans are all hung up on the age thing and forget about the fact that CJ's been through an entire season so far, and that also these guys have had a relationship that goes back to middle school. Yeah. They've been good friends since they graduated high school, but they've known each other since middle school. But I think, you know, I was watching the Pacific, the miniseries on HBO about the fighting in the Pacific during World War II, and one of the storylines there is these two childhood friends, one of them goes off to war, and then the other one comes and joins him a year or two later.
Okay.
Guess who's got some good advice for the guy who's the exact same age as him? Like, you know, the guy that's been there getting shot at and stuck in holes and everything. Like, he's been through the war, literally.
Yeah,
he's got some advice for his young friend, even though they're the exact same age. And it's good advice.
Yeah.
Because he's been, the football metaphor would be that CJ's taken those hits. CJ's done some of this. He's been through all of it.
If anything, the people who should be upset at this are Texan fans, who should be so upset that CJ is kind enough to do this. Like, what are you doing trying to help out somebody from one of the other 31 teams? this is a 32-team war. Like, would you have walked up to the German soldiers back in World War II and said, hey, buddy, you know, like,
Notice, if you guys kept your weapons clean, they wouldn't misfire so much.
I would tell CJ, stop giving advice. Stop being so nice to people.
I'm sitting over here just watching you guys fumble around, and it's annoying me.
Yeah. Keep your head up, bro. Keep your head up. Let's hear from Nick Wright on this. Nick Wright, first things first, FS1. Here's Nick upset that these two quarterbacks who are just weeks apart in age, that one would give advice to the other.
I think Caleb handled it as well as you could have, given the fact he had to be absolutely furious. That is so they are contemporaries. That is not a big bro, little bro situation.
It was, though.
That's not. No, first of all, do you know how old Caleb Williams is? He's 23. He turns 24 in a few weeks. Do you know how old CJ Stroud is? He's 23. He turns 24 in a few weeks. This is Caleb Williams and CJ Stroud. Do you know how Caleb looks at CJ, I would imagine? He remembers this night when they were colleagues on the dais at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and Caleb won the award. Like, the idea that this guy
irrelevant
means
nothing.
I totally disagree
means
with
nothing.
You.
We ain't in college no
that's
more.
That's fine.
I'm eight times better than you.
Okay.
Listen to me.
No, but that's not how it works.
I'm trying to help you.
Tell him, Brew.
Hey, let's not forget this, too. Whether you like it or not, whether you think it's notable or not in terms of whether Caleb Williams can be a football player, a good football player, he cried in his mother's bosom.
Yes.
After a loss. Bosom. Maybe this is exactly what Caleb needs.
Right.
Maybe Caleb needs a little bit of a tough advice and love. His dad's off trying to negotiate ownership shares. And what did they talk about? What did old performative Dan Bernstein talk about in the next segment? What percentage of the Bears they want to give Caleb Williams right now?
Right.
Boy, he's really earned that.
Yeah.
We should give him 25% ownership in the Bears.
Dude.
Caleb needs some damn advice and some qualified parenting from, yes, his chronological contemporary, but not his emotional contemporary.
Okay.
All right?
Here's a good advertisement for our... This text is a good advertisement for watching on YouTube. Glad I didn't hear this segment on the radio. Seeing the YouTube feed is great. The faces you guys are making are phenomenal.
Is he enjoying the horses behind me?
Are we being performative right now?
I would say we're being downright performative.
Downright performative.
Dan Bernsperm, I'm tired of you spreading your seed all over my damn airwaves, all right? You're done here. We're putting a condom on your ass.
The only thing performative is Seth's attempted a magnanimous personality this morning.
I did a pretty good job of
you
it. I was
good.
Magnanimous for the first segment.
Like 18 minutes. Yeah, you did a good job.
For those of you who are not on the YouTube stream, I'm in an Airbnb in Eugene, Oregon, and people have been admiring the picture of the horses.
You need to take that with you.
Behind me.
You need to take that with you and hang it on your wall.
No way. I can't risk my Airbnb rating.
Oh, come on. It's worth it.
I am a model citizen in Airbnbs. I've got these people complain about the cleaning checklists and everything. I want more cleaning checklist items because it keeps me from losing stuff and leaving it behind. Yes. But I will not steal these horses.
No.
These wild Oregonian stallions.
People have noticed that painting quite a bit this week. I'll just say
frankly,
that.
Frankly, I think these horses are a bit performative.
A little bit. Yeah, if not, what was the other word he used? Presumptuous. Those horses are presumptuous if
presumptuous,
not
presumptuous, dare I say, performative.
Oh, my God.
Look at them running around, gallivanting about, just because they know they have an audience.
Yeah.
If we weren't here watching those horses, they would just be standing, eating grass like the dullards that they are.
That's right. All right, let's get to headlines. The Astros lose yesterday. We've got a ton of injury news to get to with the Houston Texans and more hardware. 2 weeks in, two pieces of hardware for the Houston Texans. We'll get to that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the Astros. They lose 4-0 to the Padres last night. The Astros remain five games up in the AL West because the Mariners just refused to win also. They lose to the Yankees 2-1. Yankees clinch a playoff spot, so the Yankees are in the postseason. You're going to start to see some of that here over the next couple of weeks. Teams are going to be clinching some spots in the postseason here. Dylan Cease for the Padres was amazing last night. He gave up just one hit in eight innings. And here was Joe Espada on Dylan Cease.
Got to tip your hat to Cease. He was really good. Even from that first pitch of the game, the diving play by Machado, we hit some balls hard. You know, Jordan hit a ball hard. Diaz, you know, he was just really good.
Dylan Cease probably really happy. He looks over at Chicago like, God, thank God I'm not there anymore. I'm in San Diego. The weather's nice. We're going to be in the playoffs, and the White Sox are struggling to win 40 games. This is amazing.
The local quarterback is not an NFL quarterback anymore, but just because there is no local quarterback.
Right, yeah, San Diego. Whoever San Diego State's quarterback
is. But whoever San Diego State's quarterback is, he's not emotionally fragile and will take advice from others.
As far as we know.
He'll take advice from his superiors,
right,
Sean.
Right.
His superiors, mm-hmm. Chicago.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. Back to baseball.
Look,
in my effort to be nothing but magnanimous and kind to everybody, I have to credit the Padres with their bunting ability,
mm-hmm.
and Dylan Cease as well. But it's hard for me, Sean, to get over the fact that Caleb Ort came in and let up three straight damn home runs.
Yeah. Like,
what the hell?
Yeah.
What? Including to one Manny Machado. Do we really have to turn Manny Machado into a hero here? Do we have to be the team turns Manny Machado into a hero?
They've done a
what
good
the
job.
Hell is going on?
They've done a hell of a job of doing that in this series.
Twice,
man.
In a row.
Yeah.
Oh, Manny Machado, just that's more than anything. It's hard for me to dredge up hatred for the Padres, given their last couple decades of baseball playing and what have you.
Yeah.
But bringing Manny Machado in was one good way to do it. And now the Astros are just propping him up like he's a young Caleb Williams or something.
Well, if we see the Padres again, that means good things are happening, because it'd be in the World Series. They're pumped up about their Padres. They sold out all those games against the Astros, man. They're fired up for their Padres out there. So Astros back at it tonight. They're back home against the Angels. Four against the Angels this weekend. The magic number is down to 6, I believe, for clinching the division, combination of Astro wins and Mariners losses. Let's get to the Texans, because we got a lot of injury news to get to here. Brevin Jordan.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Brevin Jordan went to the injured reserve list yesterday with a knee injury. It was not made clear throughout the day, both with D'Amico nor with C.J. Stroud, who we're about to hear from here, if Brevin Jordan can come back. I'm just reading the tea leaves with some of the quotes, and it sounds like this is not he'll be back in 4 weeks kind of thing with injured reserve with Brevin Jordan, it would seem. Here is C.J. Stroud on Brevin Jordan going to injured reserve.
Yeah, man, it's tough, man. I'm praying for him. Man, if you want to talk about the heartbeat of this team, man, that's who he is, man. He's somebody who loves hard, and he loves everybody in this building. He loves ball. And, you know, I think he was really getting his momentum on just who he wanted to be in this league and how he wanted to approach practice. So praying for him, you know, I know he's a faith-based man. You know, God makes no mistakes, and he knows that. So I'm not worried about him, but I am going to be a brother that he can lean on. And, man, I love Brad, man. He's my brother for the rest of my life. And I really, you know that he'll be back soon, and he'll do great things when he comes back.
Cade Stover, step up. Your time now, Cade Stover. You're going to get a lot more snaps now.
I think one of the better stories about Brevin Jordan and the tight end group in general is that these guys have all become better blockers in their second year in this system. And Brevin Jordan's a guy that I think until you see him in person, you don't realize he's an undersized tight end. Because he's kind of muscular, people think he's bigger than he is. But he's got some natural disadvantages when it comes to blocking. The way the Texans have used him, as well as Dalton Schultz and Cade Stover, as fullbacks, as inline tight ends, as guys out on the edge, he's been a big part of being able to take advantage of some of the things that teams playing conservatively to take away those top three wide receivers. Brevin Jordan was going to be a big part of that.
Yep.
So if he can return this year, that'll be a nice boost at some point. Brevin Jordan for about 3 straight years, Sean, was a guy that you kept looking at thinking, well, if he doesn't prove it this year, he's probably on his way out.
They like him.
And now he's turned into, man, the way D'Amico and Caserio talk about him, he might get a bigger contract than we realized he was capable of getting.
Yep, we'll see. But it'd be nice to get him back this year. As far as other injuries go, the top two centers, both a no-go at practice yesterday. Scruggs, Patterson, didn't practice. Maybe a Kendrick Green sighting this weekend at center, possibly, against Minnesota.
Yeah, they flirted with Scott Quisenberry a little bit. And
he's on the practice squad. They signed Quisenberry.
This is a good... this is a tough spot. The interior three right now have had some bad snaps in pass protection. They, all three of them. I'm not just making youth as an excuse. Shaq Mason's had some bad snaps in pass protection, too. And, you know, Patterson looked ugly at times the other day. So that might end up being a better... Whoever ends up playing center, if it's not Juice Scruggs, might end up being better just in terms of doing the right thing, mm-hmm. whatever his physical potential is. But the interior three on the offensive line, including Kenyon Green, who looks a lot better this year, they got to get some things straight on the simple stuff. They're letting guys into the backfield way too quickly on simple twists in games.
Yeah, Brian Flores is going to have a lot for them this weekend for sure, the DC for the Vikings. Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce, both also no go at practice yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the status of Joe Mixon and his ankle injury.
Yeah, we'll take it day by day with Joe and his injury and see where he ends up at the end of the week still, and holding out hope that he can make it.
All right, not super optimistic there. Here's one more from D'Amico Ryans. Will we see more of Cam Akers possibly this weekend?
Yeah, we'll see. Cam is he's ran the ball well. As we've seen, he did a good job for us, so we'll see where Cam is as we go throughout the week as well.
Got to hold on to the football, Cam. Can't put it on the ground.
This will be an interesting week where Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator for the Vikings, does a really, really good job of disguising what they're going to do before the snap, and then all of a sudden guys just fly, like, at the snap. Are they blitzing? Are these guys in coverage? The interesting thing, especially if your running game is banged up, is, all right, this might become the classic. You've got to use the short passing game as your run game. And then it's very much a chess match between not even Bobby Slowick and Brian Flores, but C.J. Stroud and Brian Flores and those defensive backs and figuring out where, you know, when you show these looks that have become more and more popular where everybody, all the defenders are up at the line of scrimmage and then they bail out at the snap, there are opportunities there.
Yep.
It's as simple as, like, all right, there's a big old void back there. Can CJ exploit that? But you can't get fooled while doing it.
We'll talk more about this at the top of the hour. We'll get the scouting report from Nick Caserio on the Vikings. We'll start to dig into that matchup at the top of the hour.
So we're going to see a 59-yard attempt here for Fairbairn. This will be his longest of the season if he makes it. Right hash mark, south end zone, uprights. Here's the snap, here's the spot, here's the kick by Fairbairn. He's got a lot of distance, and it's good! Fairbairn makes it 59 yards.
Wow.
And the Texans have a six-point lead with 1 second to go.
All right, that was Kyme Fairbairn, a 59-yard field goal, one of six 50-plus-yard field goals he's kicked in the first 2 weeks of the season, one of three that he kicked on Sunday night against the Bears. As we expected, Kyme Fairbairn, AFC Special Teams Player of the Week for Week 2.
He'll probably be the first-ever kicker in our Circle of Swarm on Friday.
Probably so.
Give you a tease ahead, yes.
We will be doing the Circle of Swarm tomorrow on the show, getting ready for Minnesota. First kicker to make six 50-plus-yard field goals over any two-week span in league history. First kicker ever to have two games with three 50-plus-yard field goals, period. Ever. And he did it in back-to-back weeks. Like, this is... So, you know, this isn't... He did one in 2018, and now he did this one this past weekend. He's off to an amazing start. Now trails only... He's done it three times now, Player of the Week. Trailing only now Matt Schaub with four, Deshaun Watson with five, J.J. Watt with seven on the Player of the Week accolades list. And he did get the chain. He got to wear that little H chain that Joe Mixon got last week. So there you go. All right, those are your headlines as we continue here on a Thursday. Payne and Pendergast. Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile. You can get tons of benefits. Still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Yes, up next, we will start to dig in. Nick Caserio on Brian Flores, who he knows very well from their time in New England, on Sam Darnold as well, as he knows, because we all know Sam Darnold from the four teams that he's played on in his NFL career. We'll get into this Minnesota matchup and what do the Texans do to deal with some of these injuries that they may have on the O-line and in the backfield. We'll get into all that coming up next here in the 7 o'clock hour.